Let's move back to coronavirus coverage right now, because yesterday, Oregon Governor Kate Brown ordered people to stay home and businesses to close to slow the spread of the coronavirus. This is the most restrictive set of social distancing measures put in place in the state so far. Oregon Public Broadcasting science reporter Jess Burns spoke with JPR News director Liam Moriarty to explain what it all means.
Hi, Jess.
Hi, Liam.
So what did the governor announce?
Well, Governor Brown's executive order requires people to stay home, except to meet essential needs, things like buying food, getting health care, and caring for family members. She also banned social and recreational gatherings of all sizes unless the 6-foot rule can be followed. That's maintaining 6 feet between people to reduce the risk of spread of COVID, because the disease is thought to be spread through close contact and coughing and sneezing and things like that. And a way I like to think about the 6 feet, just as an aside, is that if you're facing another person and you both kick your legs forward at the same time, if your feet can touch, then you're probably too close.
So can I go outside?
Yeah, you can go outside. According to the rule, it explicitly says you can go outside with members of your household to do things like hiking and walking, biking, running. You just got to remember that 6-foot rule. But to help prevent temptation to gather in larger groups outdoors, the order does shut down pools and skate parks and playgrounds and sports courts. Campgrounds have also been closed.
So what kind of businesses are affected?
Well, it basically is all non-essential businesses will need to close beginning tomorrow. That list of businesses can be broken down into a few categories. Things like recreation, think bowling alleys and ski resorts, non-essential retail, toys, stores, furniture stores, and that sort of thing. Personal services, barbers, salons, gyms. Arts and entertainment, so no theaters, no museums, and then kind of a more general category of like social gathering spaces, like party venues, think like laser tag places and the trampoline places, and then clubs like the Elks Club.
Are bars and restaurants included?
You know, not in this order. Restaurants and bars were already covered in a previous order about a week ago. That order closed them to dine-in business. Those places are still going to be open for delivery and takeout at the discretion of the owner.
Gotcha. Any changes for businesses that don't directly interact with the public?
Well, yeah, they can all stay open, but they have to, if at all possible, require their employees to work from home. If that doesn't work for the, you know, because of technological constraints or other issues, the businesses have to designate a person on staff, kind of like a hall monitor, to make sure that people working in the same office space practice that appropriate social distancing. And the order says that businesses that don't comply with this new rule will be closed until they do.
Wow. So is travel allowed?
That's a big no. Oregonians are being instructed to minimize travel except for those essential services that I talked about earlier. And just a note that one of the reasons why the governor issued this new order today is that this past weekend, it didn't seem like people were taking social distancing measures very seriously. You know, Governor Brown cited the crowds on the coasts, crowds at Smith Rock in Central Oregon and in the Columbia Gorge. So people were definitely out and about traveling around and not really accomplishing that goal of, you know, stopping the spread of this disease. So I think you can think of this, what's ahead of us, as the ultimate staycation.
So, Jess, do we have any idea how long this is going to last?
You know, at this point, it's unknown. The governor's order doesn't have an end date, but given the outlook for the spread of the coronavirus in Oregon, the stay-at-home requirements could be in place for a few weeks at least. I think most of us have heard the phrase flatten the curve. The goal of all of these social distancing measures is to avoid a sudden spike in COVID-19 infections that could overwhelm our healthcare system. So instead, by keeping people more isolated, the idea is to slow down the spread of the virus so there is enough time and there's enough resources to go around to help all the people who need it.
Okay. Well, thanks, Jess.
Thank you.
Jess Burns is a science reporter with OPB. I'm Liam Moriarty.
And this is the Jefferson Exchange. That's the legal context for Oregon at the moment. California's there, too, having gotten there a few days earlier. Let's get into the medical realities. The major concern is that over the healthcare system and whether it can handle all the cases that are likely to come. The whole point of social distancing is so that we end up with the cases spread out over more time. Dr. Jim Shames is the medical director for Jackson County Health and Human Services. He's agreed to join us to field questions from me and you about the coronavirus outbreak. Dr. Shames, good to talk to you again.
Good to talk to you too, Jeffrey. Glad to be here.
The numbers haven't seemed to budge much in Jackson County. Two confirmed cases here, one for Josephine. Is that still holding steady?
You know, because there was quite a delay, and still is a delay, in getting lots of tests done, we have to assume that the disease is among us and spreading quickly. And just like your former caller said, the social distancing is key, and the actual numbers are really not of great significance to us. We want to be sure we can identify people who end up in the hospital or who are putting other people at risk. So I would take the numbers with a grain of salt at this point in time.
Well, all right, on that basis, one of the first emails we got was from Cindy, no town given, who wants to know. She says, I'm being told that nurses at RVMC, Asante Rogue Regional Medical Center, are saying they have 14 positive cases and are not telling the public. Are there positive cases in Jackson County, and let me rephrase that to suspected positive cases in Jackson County that haven't been confirmed as positive yet?
Let me say that rumor is not true, the one that you just reported, and we do have a press conference coming up and a press release in an hour, and we'll kind of make sure that everybody's updated at the same time at that point.
All right, are there additional cases suspected or just awaiting tests?
Well, the actual number of cases, you know, is going to be discussed at the press release. I can tell you that there's no significant change in our status. That is to say that the numbers are small, but we suspect that the actual number of cases is significantly larger.
All right, so the belief that there are more cases just as yet undetected. So what then is the status of testing in Jackson County, Jim Shames?
So it's important to realize that when you get this test, it can put the person who's doing the test at some risk. So we have a shortage of PPE, personal protective equipment, and every time a test is done, somebody needs to be garbed up, and they have face shields, and they've got gloves. So we want to minimize the overuse of PPE while we do testing. We're encouraging the testing to be funneled into just a couple of locations. For example, Asante is doing testing at their South Medford site, and they have a whole triage. This is Medford I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. They have a whole triage setup whereby you can call and talk to a nurse, you can get a video visit with a clinician, you can be triaged appropriately, and you can be tested if necessary. And that's how we would like this to be done, in an orderly fashion, testing people that fit the criteria that we've established within collaboration with the state, and to have it done such that the PPE can be utilized over and over again. You know, the same PEP can be used over an hour, for example, for multiple patients.
Dr. Shames, you were talking about the criteria for testing. What are the circumstances under which somebody should seek a test?
Well, the most important thing is to identify people who are sick with fever and fatigue and lung problems, who are sick enough that they probably need to be admitted to the hospital. It's really important that when somebody enters into the healthcare system, that we understand everything there is to know about their healthcare. Certain key individuals like healthcare workers, firefighters, police, emergency transport folks, people in confined spaces like nursing homes, people at really high risk, those individuals with compatible symptoms need to be tested as well. What we're trying to avoid is, A, people who could conceivably be spreading the disease to get out, get in their car, wait in a line, you know, interact with others, when in fact what they really need to be doing is staying at home and keeping an eye on things and taking care of themselves. And we also want to make sure that folks with very mild symptoms don't kind of clog up the system when, in fact, there are some high-risk people we really need to be testing. So if you were to call the triage hotline for Asante, and if there are similar systems in place at other institutions where you are, find out whether you fit the criteria and go through their system so that you can be tested if you need to be tested, and otherwise stay at home.
Now, based on what you know, and granted, this we're all sort of new at this, all more than sort of. We are, in fact, new at this. Is COVID-19 somewhat confounding in that some people can test positive and not be showing much in the way of symptoms?
Well, it's confounding because it's new, as you said. We're just months into this, and you know, most of what we thought we knew came from China, and the information was spotty. And now that we have direct experience in this country, we're getting more of a sense of it. What is clear is it's quite contagious, it's quite serious, and it does seem to spread when individuals don't necessarily know they're sick, and certainly early in their sickness. It's also clear that it's a disease that can go on for weeks and weeks, and people can look pretty good for a while, and then, you know, get sick enough they need to be hospitalized, in some cases sick enough they need to be on a respirator.
I was going to read his email, but it looks like he's called in. So here's Grumpy John at Grants Pass. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Dr. Jim Shames.
Thanks. I will. Here's one question I will just tell you. Laundromats, please discuss. The other is the warning that don't wear a mask unless you're trying to keep your germs in. This doesn't make sense because if you've got to have a six foot distance between you and everybody else, this proves that it is airborne and therefore you should be having an N95 mask on, particularly if you have a N95 with the little plastic gadget on the top that lets you exhale through that instead of saturating your mask by exhaling through the mask. So there's my two questions.
Okay, laundromats and masks. Thanks for that, Grumpy John.
You know, the laundromat question really raises the whole issue of some of us being more privileged than others. Staying at home and taking care of yourself and not going out is pretty difficult when you have to go out to do basic things like wash your clothes. Even more problematic for people who don't have a home to hunker down in. So, part of what we're doing for public health is to coordinate with lots of other agencies to try and assist people who don't, you know, have the same advantages as others to be able to do what's going to keep them safe and healthy. As far as the masks are concerned, this seems to be primarily a droplet spread infection. And that means that when you cough and sneeze or even breathe, for that matter, small droplets will leave your mouth and then eventually fall to the ground, fall on an inanimate object. And it's spread primarily from either breathing that in because you're too close to somebody or touching the same thing that the person touched and then touching your mouth or your nose or your eyes. We have a critical shortage of all sorts of masks, including N95 masks, which in order to be, you know, utilized properly, need to be what's called fit tested to be sure that the mask fits your face and you know how to apply it and whether it's the right mask or the wrong mask. And we are trying to restrict the use of N95s for people who are in high-risk situations. And that means not only are you in the vicinity of somebody who has COVID, but in fact, you're doing something that's going to aerosolize the virus, which it doesn't normally want to do. So if you're intubating somebody, if you are doing surgery on somebody, if you're providing, you know, ventilation for somebody, those would be situations where you definitely want to have a mask. So it's a bit complicated. I think we all need to be careful that we are preserving the limited PPE we have for the people that are most at risk.
How limited are they? I mean, if things continue at the current rate, will you exhaust the supplies in a week, a month, what?
Well, that's a little unclear. Everybody's running short. The hospitals are beginning to look at how to recycle the masks, how to re-sterilize them and use them again, experimenting with keeping the masks on longer than they're used to. Lots of strategies going on. We did get a cache of masks from various sources. You know, the Strategic National Stockpile would be one. And they have been distributed primarily to the hospitals. So we're sort of okay for now. We're running low on surgical masks, which is interesting because they're simpler and cheaper and easier to manufacture, but we're having a shortage of those at the moment.
There's a lot on social media about patterns to make the surgical masks.
And right.
You've got a sewing machine at the time. Now, are those useful to you? Or, I mean, can you actually make use of stuff like that?
You know, I think they are. We're, you know, kind of catching up on what we can use and what we can't. I think a lot of the experts are still kind of chewing on that question. Personally, I think those masks can be quite useful, certainly for individuals that are staying at home and they have symptoms, to allow them, if they do have to be in public or interface with other people, they can wear a mask. I think that bandanas and cloth of any kind really can be quite effective in preventing the droplets leaving the person who has an infection to others. So I think we're going to use these masks. We're collecting them at the Emergency Operations Center at the Expo in Medford, and we're starting to inventory what we have and figure out where they can be used. Certainly, if we run out of surgical masks and no one is manufacturing them fast enough, we're going to need to use whatever we can, and frankly, I think those masks look pretty good. We just haven't put them through rigorous testing, so you know they're certainly better than nothing.
Jim Shames, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. He is Jackson County's Chief Medical Officer in the Department of Health and Human Services. We're talking about coronavirus, the war against coronavirus, basically, in Jackson County. You can join the conversation on the Exchange, 800-838-3760, by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Susan, no town given, emails and asks about not medical supplies, but just home supplies. Is it still okay to be going out to get supplies if we use the senior hours? Will that ever be too dangerous if the cases go up radically? And she says, thanks for all you do.
This social distancing that we're engaged in is really important, and it's important to do it right. I think that you should try and find a way to aggregate those trips. So if there's a group of people, all of whom need some shopping, it'd be nice if one person did it. There are a number of places that deliver. You can order from Costco, for example, and they will bring food to you. If those strategies have been exhausted, I think you do need to try and go at a time of day when there are the least number of other people. Bring your wipes with you. If you don't have any, you can create a way to disinfect surfaces with a 5% bleach solution and some rags. Remember to wash your hands. What I've done when I've been out, and I, by the way, haven't been out of the house in a week and a half, mm-hmm. except to ride my bike, but you can put a glove on one hand, and that's the hand that you use to push the cart, grab things off the shelf, and the other hand can handle your phone and your credit card, and then you wash your hands when you get out.
So how much, I mean, again, we're really new at this, so everybody's learning at the same time. Are there things you're doing medically in terms of taking precautions against the spread of coronavirus that you didn't do for other outbreaks?
Well, this is a more serious in disease than I think anyone's seen in 100 years. This is the big one. It's like, you know, waiting for the earthquake that everybody talks about. This is what those of us in healthcare and certainly in public health have been thinking about and planning for and strategizing about for a very long time. It's infectious. It's serious. Spreads quickly, and we don't have a lot of the tools that we are used to. We don't have medications that are effective, that have been thoroughly tested. We don't have a vaccine. It won't for quite some time. So we're left with social distancing and serious social distancing as our primary tool. It will definitely work, and it's really important.
Speaking of which, there's an email here from Chris in Ashland who writes, on Sunday, I went by myself to Lithia Park for a walk in the sunshine. I was stunned to see it packed with people, almost all of whom were in close proximity, having picnics, playing frisbee and tennis, kids on the play equipment, even an impromptu wrestling match. How do we communicate to people the importance of keeping physical distance? That from Chris in Ashland.
I don't know, but we're still working on it. The governor, you know, is applying guidelines in a more and more stringent way. I'm open for suggestions. I don't know how you get folks to realize that throwing a frisbee means that you're touching it and the next person's touching it. Mm-hmm. Being outside is certainly, you know, generally safer than being inside. I've taken a number of walks, but, you know, I keep my distance, and if you can do that, you're not putting yourself at risk.
Another question here dropped off by phone by Teresa and Eugene, who follows up on the laundromats question raised by Grumpy John. You know, she says laundromats are used by those who live in apartments. Not all are commercial. How do we address shared communal spaces, and how should they be cleaned?
Mm. Fortunately, this virus does seem to be fairly easy to kill, so that lots of household products will kill it. The trick, of course, is to, you know, cover all those, you know, all those places on a washing machine, such as the coin dispenser and the top. And I think that being fastidious about cleaning your hands, you know, before and after, cleaning all the surfaces, trying to do it at a time when no one else is present, is about as good as you're going to get. The other thing would be to, just like purchasing food, to strategize in a way that you know, minimize the number of visits, and perhaps try and go at times when you suspect there'll be few people present.
It seems like we're spending all our time in the laundromat here, but I want to follow up on something Grumpy John had asked earlier, though, but didn't ask it on the air, which is about the does the temperature of the wash make a difference? I mean, if you think you might have coronavirus on your clothes from some public exposure someplace, I mean, will a hotter wash take care of it? Do we even know?
What I've been told is that soap and water is very effective, mm-hmm. and it doesn't have to be steaming hot. So I think, you know, warm water, just make sure you have an adequate amount of detergent so it really gets foamy, and that should really kill the virus.
Okay, we got a listener question here off of Twitter wondering if Jackson County Jail will be releasing nonviolent offenders or making other meaningful changes to prevent spread within the jail. Not your decision, I know, but have you had questions, for example, from the sheriff's office?
Yeah, we've had a number of conversations with them, and they're having a lot of internal discussion themselves, and they've got a plan. And, you know, I don't think it's for me to explain their plan, but it definitely involves trying to increase social distancing in the jail, get people who don't really need to be in the jail out, provide services for those that need it when they leave the facility. And I'm really impressed on the kind of work they're doing.
Dr. Jim Shames, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, Jackson County's chief medical officer at the Department of Health and Human Services. We're talking about coronavirus and its spread, or we hope lack thereof, in Southern Oregon. You can join the conversation with your own calls and questions at 800-838-3760 or jx@jeffnet.org. Joy and Talent wants to know if the COVID-19 news conferences are streamed live on the county website.
They are available on the county website. I don't know about the streaming live per se, but I know that there's a number of previous press conferences that you can pull up and look at. I'm going to guess yes to live, but that's not exactly what I do.
But at least they're archived there. Is what
they
you're
are.
Saying.
They're okay. Archived there, yes.
All right. So how much has the situation, again, we're talking about not a much of a change in numbers, but you certainly suspect that there are more people out there who are positive, that the disease is among us. I mean, any sense? I mean, how much have things changed over the last 2 weeks, let's say, as we've watched the numbers zoom worldwide?
So this is the part that people really need to understand, that when you look around and you say, well, gee, I don't know anybody that has coronavirus, you know, I've talked to my neighbors, I've talked to my friends, that's the time that you need to hunker down and stay in place. If you already know three or four people and you've heard about these others, it's kind of too late, because it's a mathematical modeling where the numbers seem low and they seem low and they seem low, and within, you know, a week's time, you can go from hardly any perception of disease to it looks like everybody's got it. And if you can cut that off early, then that's what's called flattening the curve, which everybody has heard about. But the concept is that you have the cases sort of trickle out instead of coming all at once. And when it comes all at once, the whole system kind of falls apart. You know, you don't have law enforcement, you don't have the EMS folks, the doctors are sick, the nurses are sick, you've overwhelmed your healthcare system. And people can die because they just, you know, they just can't get even some basic care they might need. So in order to flatten the curve, we've got to do all these somewhat draconian things, and we have to do them at a time when you're not aware that you need to be doing them. So a lot of trust has to be involved. And I can tell you, the people who really seem to know this stuff, the people that I'm listening to, are all unified on the importance of this social behavior we have to engage in. So it's the most important thing. It's the most important tool that we have, and we need to be doing it right now.
Well, this is the paradox, I think, of what you're talking about, Dr. Shames. If things go well, it seems like we could end up thinking, that wasn't such a big deal because the precautions worked.
Yes, that's exactly right.
All right. So let's see. Polly, no town given, says if we live in Ashland or Talent, do we have to go to Asante Medford?
Yes.
Okay. So now, what should be the procedure then? If somebody thinks they might have something, they see their doctor first, or they go to Asante? What's the recommended approach here?
First of all, let me see if I can quickly pull up that phone number. The approach is that you should talk to somebody who is knowledgeable about, somebody who is part of the triage team. And here we go. So the Asante ambulatory patient workflow has a patient COVID triage line, and the number is 541-789-2813.
541-789-2813. I can see it, too. It's right on the Asante.org front page as well, if the number's getting past you. But it's 541-789-2813. That's in non-emergent situations. For emergencies, call 911.
That's correct. At this point in time, there aren't many of those. We're still early in this. But yes, of course. But what will happen when you call that triage hotline is you're going to get a nurse who's been trained to ask you key questions. We'll probably refer you for a televisit with an urgent care provider who can then decide what's the appropriate next step for you, if there's further testing needed or not. So it's pretty non-invasive in the perspective of not having to put yourself at risk, and they're trying to ramp up so that they can handle all the calls that come their way.
Denise, no town. Denise in Ashland asks the million-dollar question. I've known several people in the last 2 weeks with coughs, fevers, and various symptoms similar to COVID-19, but testing was not available. Doesn't it make more sense to do widespread testing such as South Korea? That, again, from Denise in Ashland. I'm sure the answer is yes, but there's real difficulty in getting a hold of the test, it sounds like, still.
Right. Well, you know, you create your public health strategy based on what tools you have. If we had hundreds of thousands of tests, then our strategy might look more like South Korea, where, you know, we can just identify everybody and get the asymptomatic people at home. We don't have that. So we're going to have to utilize the tests for identifying people at the highest risk who could put us at the highest risk. I forgot the first part of that question.
It was generally about, you know, it would help to stop the spread if we had the testing. So, but we don't have the testing is the point. So this actually creates a difficulty in trying to flatten the curve because you don't know where and to whom to go after.
Kind of. I mean, if everybody stays away from others and prevents the spread of the disease, that is ultimately effective. It would be nice to have the tool of testing, but I think we can do very important public health measures without it.
All right, Dr. Jim Shames, what time is the news conference today?
9:30, 9:45. Oh, the news the press release is coming out at 9, uh-huh. And I think the news conference is going to be 10:30, 10:45, something like that. I'm not sure.
Okay, but more things to watch for from Jackson County Health and Human Services, where Jim Shames is the public health director, the chief medical officer for Jackson County. Thank you for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange. Hope to have you on again soon.
Oh, you bet. Good to talk to you again.